Hello there, and welcome to the Citizen ATX podcast as we are continuing our series, Unwrapping Christmas. Glad that you're joining us today. My name is Matt Gillum. We also have with me Nathan Wood. Hello, Nathan.
Hello.
And also Stephen Vaughn.
Hello. Hey, hello.
We have been like Santa's workshop here over these last couple weeks, just putting together some toys of wisdom and stuff like that. And
A gift bag, if you will.
Well, as we are rapidly approaching Christmas, and as I know you are scrambling personally to get all those Christmas gifts ready, we wanted to go into this Christmas season, and we've talked the last 2 weeks about two big Bible passages, Luke 2 and Matthew 2, kind of explaining out the some of these words that we use around Christmas time that we may not understand. And so for this one, we wanted to do a little bit more rapid fire type, and to really, you know, go for some of the stuff that appears a lot and we don't really know what they mean. So I think the best way to start on this one is the one that we were laughing about off air. I say laughing about, that sounds terrible. But we were trying to figure out.
We were laughing at our own ignorance.
Yes, exactly. But it's the word Noel, all right? So this is obviously, if you're a Lauren Daigle-ite, Lauren Bagel, goodness, you're going to hear this song a lot over Christmas. And I dare say you probably have no idea what this word means, but dadgummit if you're not going to sing it a whole bunch during the thing. So, Nathan, what have we discovered about the word Noel and what it means?
What we have discovered is that we have no idea what it means.
Well, friends, first of all, you need to understand the word Noel does not appear in the Bible.
It's either from the Latin or from the French.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a couple of different things, like, you know, the Webster in 1828, the dictionary defined it as a shout of joy or a Christmas song. But I highly doubt they're singing shout of joy or Christmas song, Christmas song, you know, and then
the first Christmas song. It's kind of, you know.
Yeah, it could come from the Latin term, and I don't speak Latin, so forgive my pronunciation of this, but Natalis, I'm going to go with that one, meaning birth, right? Uh-huh. So we're celebrating the birth of Christ. Mm-hmm. The possibility is the French word, which we thought this one was probably the most likely, nouvelles, which means news, mm-hmm, right? So it's like the first Noel the angels did say was a certain poor shepherd. So like the good news, right,
right,
that Jesus was born. But that's... Yeah. So there we go. That's our discussion. So like we said, we know nothing. We're making a guess.
So the first Noel is a song about a song.
It's a Christmas carol about a Christmas carol.
Well, they're good. And that brings us our next word, carol. Where, you know, I've always wondered that one because I'm like, so why are we singing songs about Carol? You know, like why is she so special in the world that she should have
great apple pie?
Yeah. Well, so I looked this one up and this one does make sense in that, again, it's not a word that's used in the Bible. It's used later and again, as you're going to see with a lot of these words we're talking about, really comes from medieval French and English, based off of Latin. And the Latin word comes from the word choralis, which is chorale, like a chorus. So that a Christmas carol is a song that's designed to be sung by a group of people. Mm-hmm. It's not a, you know, this isn't a solo kind of gig. It's meant to be sung together as part of community to shout these praises and sing these praises all together. So I think there's a little, that one feels good to me about, you know, the idea of, and then the idea of Christmas caroling being a group of people who are going around as a chorus so that whenever someone tries to beat them up, the rest can run away and the weak one can get caught. So
don't gotta be the fastest person. You gotta be faster than the slowest.
And clever.
Yeah. Well, and I think objectively we can say, and this is not subjective at all, this is 100% objective, that Carol the Bells is the best Christmas song of all time. I think that one stands to reason. I think that's just a fact.
You know? Well, I like it with the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. That's the one. Well, some other things to consider too. And I think this kind of connects to even these first two that we've talked about. You know, these words come into our vocabulary, but we don't really know where they come from. The reality is most of what we use for our Christmas jargon and vocabulary comes from the Catholic Church. You know, we've been saying that, well, these things come from Latin. Realistically, most of our experience of Christmas is ritual, right? It's you do the same things every year to try to symbolize who Christ is and is coming. And that's a good thing. But when you have tradition that is then driving, the way that we're designed to do this is to have a belief that creates a practice that becomes a tradition. Instead, most of the time what we do, because this is just human nature, is we take a tradition that then we say, well, this tradition then defines our belief, and then defines our practice, and then our practice defines our belief. So we get it backwards. Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's we do what we do at Christmas because we've always done it, and that must be the true thing to do. Which is how you wind up with a jolly fat man named Santa Claus coming out from the reality of a Turkish guy who punched a heretic in the face named Saint Nicholas. So, I mean, you have this layered upon layer upon layer of 2,000 years of practice and tradition. And, you know, one of the things to consider when we're talking about a lot of this is that, you know, many of these things come from a bygone era where it meant something. So, like, for instance, Christmas trees. Why in the world, how does it make sense for us to go and chop down a tree and then put it in our house? Like, I don't do that. Do you do that with that cedar tree that gives you all that nice pollen? Like, that right on in the house. And
yes.
I come from a fake tree family.
Fake tree. I've become one. I've been converted. So I know the answer to this, but do you guys know where the Christmas tree comes from? For that,
is it representative of the cross?
Oh, well, you there know, you go. Wood that could be, yeah.
Wood on the cross.
Yeah. From what I've read, most of it is the fact that it's bringing an evergreen tree into your home, and it's this idea of life even in the depth of winter, and the hope that comes from through Christmas season into the home. And so then you have a spruce or a pine instead of a cactus.
To spruce up your house. That makes more sense now.
So it's like, take that, palm tree people. Like, you know, Christmas doesn't come on a palm tree. It's got to be a pine.
It'd be too dangerous. Coconuts,
And then, you know, even more bizarre, consider the how we got Christmas lights on trees, right? Because so not only are you cutting down a tree, killing it you're killing it, and you bring it into your home for it to dry out, and then we think it's a good idea to hang flammable objects. I mean, the original thing weren't electric lights; they were candles. And I'm looking at this and like, man, this is insane.
No need to have the bonfire outside. Yeah, just bring it in.
You know
no.
what? Hindsight's 2020. All right. It reminds me of whenever there's an actual thing where there was a surgeon who discovered this breakthrough, medical breakthrough, that maybe we should wash our hands before surgery. Because before they would go like surgery on one dude and just go straight to the next. Like, no.
And do a
haircut. Of course, you know, diseases are going. Everyone guys like, what if I got a crazy idea? What if we washed our hands before we started doing surgery on somebody? You know what? Mortality fell is all I'm going to say. All right. So mortality rates improved.
You just connected Christmas trees to surgery. That's an interesting segue.
I'm just saying that we it's easy to look back on it now with hindsight and be like, oh, those idiots. But we would have been the same if we were around at that time. Yeah. Come on.
Well,
we know better.
And reading up on it, they actually attribute it to Martin Luther, you know, so that he said that since that one day he was walking through the forest and one night, and he saw the stars and the trees coming through the branches. He thought, that's beautiful. I want to make that happen in my house. So maybe it's probably not, but you know, it could
be. It's just hard to imagine Martin Luther being a guy who celebrates Christmas. I don't know why. It's just hard for me to imagine him as a Christmas guy or a jolly fellow, you know. I don't know why. It just is.
I don't know. Maybe. Well, and so let's talk about some other things here. Like another one, the idea of Advent. Have y'all ever heard? Yep, y'all have heard this term, Advent, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes in the church you have these candles that all of a sudden, like, there are candles on the stage in like a Baptist church where, you know, you bring incense in, you will get run out of town. So now there are these candles up on the stage, and they're called Advent candles. Any idea where that comes from?
I mean, it's sort of the arrival, right? So it's about like celebrating the birth of Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where the tradition started, but I mean that's what it is.
It's Latin, yeah. Adventist. It is the arrival. So again, it's referring to the full season that they're celebrating this arrival of Christ as a full season. You know, an interesting thing too. So we talked about even with the Christmas tree thing. You know, how did it come into practice? It came into the U.S. By Pennsylvania Germans, right? So there you go, the Amish, right, bringing it over. But it really wasn't popular until Queen Victoria had one in her home. So Queen Victoria was married to a German dude, and the Germans practiced this. They had trees they had Christmas trees. Well, when Queen Victoria did it, now everybody wants to do it because everybody wants to be like Queen Victoria. Mm-hmm. And so that is how
we're kind of still in the same thing with our fascination of the royal family. Here.
It is. But I mean, it is this. That's the other part of this. I think that when we look at how amazing is it that once one person in the neighborhood puts up Christmas lights, all of a sudden all the other Christmas lights come out? You know, when we see the way that other people celebrate Christmas, we think, well, maybe I should do that. Maybe I should get a piece of that action, right?
It almost hurts to do a competition, too.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Oh, I gotta show this guy up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like dads and lawns. I mean, you hear one mower strike up. There's going to be there's never just one. There's always multiple, because then the others remember, oh, man, I don't want my yard to look bad. So, I mean, we do this, though, in a religious aspect as well, where we see, well, all these people are doing this tradition and they're practicing this thing. Maybe I should, too. And so, you know, the good thing about it is that with all this stuff that happens at Christmas, stockings, Christmas Eve, you know, all these things, there are meanings behind all these things. And it doesn't take much to go back and look at it. But ultimately, I think one of the big questions I want to ask here is, why do we do traditions anyway? Like, what is the compelling reason that we, as human beings and as believers, continually we get into these things where we do these symbolic practices year after year after year?
Well, I think in one sense, we naturally want to gravitate towards a sense of order. Mm-hmm. And so having an expectation of what we're walking into every year and what we need to get done and who's going to hang the Christmas tree this year or put the Christmas tree up this year and hang all the other decorations and who's going to do this, who's going to do that. And then we also probably have our favorite hymns and stuff that we want to have sung, you know, and there's a sense of nostalgia to that as well, because when it comes to starts getting cold outside a little bit and the leaf falls out of the tree, you're like, ooh, we're getting back to that season again. Here we go. And you start thinking of all those things in your head, and it does bring you joy to have some of those traditions.
Yeah, there's kind of a comfort to that, right? Yeah. Like, that's one of the things that we do crave in our lives is comfort and refuge and that sense of home. And sometimes tradition does that for us, where we feel safe and secure knowing that this is the environment that's going to be around us. The ironic thing is when those same traditions that we use to bring ourselves comfort start to bring us stress, right? So, like, you know, for instance, growing up, we had VHS tapes, right? And then, so in order to get the program that you wanted around Christmas time, you had to record it on a VHS. And so now there are certain Christmas movies that I know that I see things that the pieces of it were cut out because we went to commercial and they stopped recording, but then they forgot to turn it back on in time. And so then it cut off an important piece of the movie. And so it's like right in my childhood, right? Like, I don't know what's going on. What happened to the Ebenezer Scrooge? Did he make it?
In the days where you could just not know things.
Yeah. Oh, man. In the days when you could just not know things. Yeah. Or even worse, you tape over the tape, right? That's a bad feeling.
Yeah.
But I mean, with that, you know, it's interesting to me how we can get into this mode of traditions and traditionalism and say, have our whole holiday turn on whether we're able to do that or not. I think that's where a lot of stress comes from, because we're trying to measure up to the quality of holidays that we experience as children and the wonder that's there. And we're afraid that if we don't, then we'll either be shamed or fall short or ruin somebody's holiday. And so, I know. I think that there's that double-edged sword there, where tradition does create comfort. It does create a sense of home. But also, if we're doing it for tradition's sake, then we can find ourselves in a kind of a painful spot, in a stressful spot. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, agree, disagree?
No, I agree. And I think nostalgia really does come into it. And I think a lot of times, too, you're just born and you grow up in a family, and most families, they have traditions that they do. Yeah. Like mine, I remember as a kid, I was the youngest of four. We would put up the Christmas tree. I remember it was a big deal. We'd all go up in the attic together and get everything down, and we put it up. And the really big deal was who got to put the angel on top of the tree.
Yeah.
And so every 4 years, you got to be the one. And it was like this really exciting time.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about this right now. So Ellie, my wife, is set to give birth on December 19th. Well, every single year, my extended family and family gets together and does a family Christmas in Dallas, and everybody comes in for it. And I was talking to my mom, and I was like, I think this is the first one in my entire life I'm going to miss. Like, I've never missed family Christmas before, and I have a good excuse not to be there, right? Mm-hmm. But it was one of those things, like, it was kind of like a little bit of FOMO, like, oh gosh, this is terrible. I'm going to miss family Christmas.
And there's a guilt associated with that, right?
Well, even my mom was like, well, you could just come down. Like, it's I was like, Mom, I'm not gonna risk it. All right. My mom was like, are you sure you can't make it? I was like, listen, you're gonna have a grandbaby. Positive. Calm down.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna leave my 9-month pregnant wife.
Yeah.
And drive to Dallas for a family weekend. But it's still like, I remember there was some anxiety for me of like, oh no, I'm gonna miss out on my I've never missed this before.
Yeah. And I mean, and that is, I think, you know, one of the tensions that happens in this season is, you know, as we forget the meaning behind the traditions that we pursue and that we put together, then because it becomes just doing the thing for the thing, we lose that savor of why we did it in the first place. Yeah. You know, we talked about in a previous episode, you know, how there is this yearning, this excitement about the season, about the coming of Christ, and that was what drove the shepherds and the magi to go pursue him. And you know, that's ultimately what happens to us when we let tradition run the show rather than let true belief help establish, or if it's good tradition, reestablish the tradition. A couple of weeks ago, I got an opportunity to speak at the summit here at our church, which is a worship night that we do with young adults. And I made that statement that some traditions are worth keeping. But the burden, I think, that happens with that is for us who understand the tradition to be able to explain the why to others, and then to be able to revive those traditions rightly. And then if there's a tradition that doesn't really need to happen because it's either gotten silly or is starting to actually work against itself, where let's just say it this way, like, you know, for a lot of people, the tradition of giving gifts at Christmas becomes a hindrance to understanding the generosity of Christ because we're pressured into keeping up with the Joneses and putting ourselves in debt to make our gifts this year better than last year. I mean, that's not the spirit of the tradition. And so I think what the burden is not to throw out the tradition altogether, but to stop and communicate with each other. This is what this means. We practice generosity of giving gifts at Christmas because Christ has been generous with us, that God is generous with us, so we want to be generous with each other. Like that's the meaning behind that. Yeah. But when do we consider that when we are getting herded through Macy's and through the cloud of perfume into the into the pretzel shop at the mall, right?
In which,
you know, I have no problem with pretzels, but, you know, Christmas consumerism, I'm telling you. So anyway, I mean, how else does tradition impact and interact with the way that you do Christmas? Like, how have you, Nathan, as a father of a, I guess your boy's two now,
about
right?
to be two, yeah.
So how have you begun to take on tradition, Christmas tradition yourself in the home with him?
Yeah, I think I'm actually excited. This will be the first year I think he'll actually get it. Like last year, he was 11 months old. So, I mean, he didn't really understand what was going on, you know? And so I'm excited about it as he gets older. But I think one of the hard parts about tradition, I think, especially when you get married, is whose tradition are you going to follow, right? Because it's like, I've got what I did. Ellie's got what her family did. And so it's kind of merging those things. But I will say, I think it presents an interesting, for us at least, conversation of, well, what traditions do we want to do? What do we want to have in our house is what we do. But no, I mean, it's just an exciting time. I think for Asher, and even then, I mean, you can try to concentrate basics, but he's two. He's not going to understand the crucifixion and Jesus, right? So a lot of it right now is just, I think for me, the focus is on time as a family. It's quality,
right?
It's being, not so much about the gifts, but just being together, spending time with extended family who are here in town and just, hey, love y'all. Let's do dinner together. Let's just spend time, just have fellowship. Let's spend time together. But as he gets older, obviously, you know, the goal would be to help him understand the true meaning. My sister, I will say, I think she has, they did something pretty cool. So for them, they kind of got to a point with the girls where it was like, we really don't need more gifts. We don't need more things. So instead, what she does is every Christmas they go as a family and they serve somewhere.
Yeah.
Like that's become their tradition, is we have enough. We're going to go and give our time. We're going to give money, and we're going to take care of people who don't have as much as what we have. And I think that's a pretty cool thing to kind of set in as well.
Well, and that's a great example of, they identified the belief. They did their practice as a result of that, and it's become a tradition. And so I think for you, listener, as you're considering all of these traditions that you do around Christmas, you know, first of all, take time to understand it. Take time to ask questions, even if they seem like dumb questions. Half the questions I ask are dumb. Or I say dumb, half. 99% of the questions I ask are dumb ones.
Amen.
But, hey, shut up.
Wow.
But But the reality is, the only way that we ever learn and the only way that we ever gain insight is by asking those questions. And, you know, for you, as you're getting set to prepare Christmas, as you are discovering the meaning behind what you do, how can you then communicate that through family love, through just actually vocalizing and verbalizing, hey, guess what I learned about dot, dot, dot? You'll be amazed that as we bring truth back into tradition, how it revives and brings life into the way that we do our holidays. Mm. It gives us purpose. It gives us meaning. And then as a result, you will develop these special memories because the truth is being lived out through our new traditions. So, well, friends, we've been so glad to be able to be with you here in 2023. This has been a great year, and we appreciate you as a listener. And we hope that you look forward to next year as we continue to have these important conversations, as we ask questions of one another and of the Bible and of our faith to understand more of how God has designed us and how he directs us through this life. But for now, on behalf of Stephen and Nathan and Pastor Jonathan and myself, we hope that you have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. See you later from Citizen ATX.